B-Pod Studios.
Mike Riley, I think it's Monday afternoon as we're taping this. The lead story in wrestling right now is CM Punk, the new All Elite Wrestling champion. He defeated Jon Moxley in what I thought was a really outstanding matchup. And instead of coming into the AEW media press conference after the show was over, happy about being the champion again, he goes on this rant about journalism reporting. The artist known as Colt Cabana, and going back to these issues, I miss these issues being a problem this week. This wasn't really on my radar. So when he walks into the press conference room that I'm in Chicago, because I was live at the pay-per-view last night, at some point.
Yeah, it was last night. Yeah.
Like 12 hours ago, I think.
Yep.
This was not on my radar. I'm thinking Punk's going to come in. He's going to be happy. He's going to want to talk about the program with Mott. Like, I'm in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to ask a question here. It's going to be a real softball and we're going to go. And no, he's ranting and raving about Colt Cabana and wasn't on my radar, but apparently this was a thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the journalists from Wrestling Inc. was there, and I guess he had history with Colt Cabana.
Scott Housman.
And yes. And so all of that, and I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to edit this audio into this podcast in post-production, because I think it's worth everybody hearing, and I'm not sure whether I'm going to edit it before we transition to the real gossip of the aftermath of this, which we'll talk about, and I've got some dirt, brother.
Want to hear it?
What happened while the tag team champions were talking to the media? Because this is like unbelievable, and thankfully I haven't seen it reported anywhere yet. But there's some good dirt, brother. Like this, CM Punk coming in angry at the world was not on my bingo card 12 hours ago. Like, he wins the title in Chicago and he should be happy, and instead he uses his media time. It was up there 20 minutes, he used probably 15 of it to rant and rave about Colt Cabana and how they're no longer friends and so on and so on. So in post-production, I'm going to put like probably about a 7-minute chunk of that audio probably in here right now. But short of that, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, I don't want 7 minutes of CM Punk cussing on our podcast.
No.
But it's so good and it's gripping, but I don't know that everybody understands it. And so this is my thing. Like, Mike Riley, like, I think we were texting in real time this morning, last night, like, while this press conference was going on. Did you have any clue what CM Punk was talking about?
So, with the Young Bucks stuff and Adam Page, I kind of put two and two together a little bit. But not in real time. When you and I were talking about this, I was like, what the hell is he all mad about? You know, I had to go back. Now, full disclosure, while I was watching it, I didn't jump into the press conference about 5 minutes in, and he was already off to the races, okay? But looking at the live tweets, I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Looking back on it and figuring it out, he is very angry, CM Punk being he, very angry with Hangman Page, and it seems like he's got a beef with the Young Bucks.
He does.
All right. And also, he went after Brian Alvarez of The Observer.
He went after Meltzer, too.
And Meltzer, too, yeah, with the video on Hangman.
He's like, Dave, what did I do wrong? And Dave was looking right at him and was like, well, you tell us what's going on here.
I heard that didn't
get picked up well enough on the audio because it was off mic.
Now, let me ask you.
He went after Brian Alvarez of the Wrestling Observer newsletter because he was so passionate about CM Punk going into business for himself And I don't think the audio picked up Alvarez being like, well, yeah, because that's the intel that he explained himself very well. And yeah. CM Punk seemed accepting-ish of that answer.
Right.
But I think it's because they put the Wrestling Observer newsletter puts their videos on their YouTube channel. They do free ones. So I think that's where a lot of it goes. I think that probably, I don't know. I haven't gotten Meltzer stuff in a long time. Like every once in a while, somebody will send me a clip. But Punk seemed accepting of their answers. Dave actually asked a question about how healthy CM Punk was, and Punk gave a really good answer of how his rehab was going. But that's a little bit off topic. But I think that, and this is something for media and journalists, if you're one of those going forward, the fact that they were in the room, I think, ticks up. And that's something that I've always believed in, is that if you're going to crap talk people or you're going to report on stuff, you have to be in the room so that they can yell at you if you want. I've been yelled at many times about things. I'll get a phone call on my way home because somebody wants to yell at me about something. And that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's the job. And then you have a discussion. And hopefully you're good.
Yeah, after make the peace. Fact. Yeah. Well, now let me ask you this. Two things here. The Hausman question. From watching it for the first time back, my initial thought, this is a work. I thought it was a work. No. That was initial. I know. Yeah, it did. And obviously,
so what I assume you watched the AEW media feed?
Well, okay. So that was my other thing I was going to go to here.
Okay.
So I purposely watched two different angles. I saw the AEW feed, and then I wanted to see the side angle of Tony Khan's reaction. And I'm sure you saw that firsthand, his reaction.
Oh, yeah. I saw it live.
All right.
But here's how it started. CM Punk walked in and said, how many people, and I think I've got the clip that I'll put this audio in before we get to what happened in the locker room while the media stuff was going on.
Right.
And I'm sorry it's 8 minutes, but I think it's fascinating and it sets up what we're talking about right now.
It's the hottest topic.
It is, and it shouldn't be, because they had a really good pay-per-view. There was a lot of good wrestling this weekend.
Yep.
And we're talking about backstage issues, because that's what's interesting, at least to us. Maybe we're wrong, but we'll see when the downloads come out, right? So he walked in there and he's like, how many people here consider yourselves journalists? Please raise your hands.
Right.
And so I kind of like raised my hand.
Yeah, and you are.
And in my mind, I'm like, oh God, I don't feel like being yelled at. I'm tired. I don't feel like being yelled at by anybody.
Right.
But he went right to the Wrestling Inc. guy, and had the back and forth. And it'll come up. It'll be in post production here, so you guys will all hear it. And he just went after him because he had a relationship with the wrestler known as Colt Cabana. Didn't see that coming. Didn't see that coming at all. Like, in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to ask CM Punk the softest question ever. Like, chat me up about your program with Jon Moxley. Like, that was what I'm thinking, is we're going to talk about this match. We're going to talk about this story. Nope. He wanted to talk about Colt Cabana. He wanted to talk about the EVPs, leaking gossip. Like, he was angry. And again, my mind is blown. My mind was just blown. Like, in being in press conferences for other sports, like, I can't tell you a time that I've seen somebody walk in that angry. Like, I thought of the Rick Pitino press conference where Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans, sure, and Robert Parrish, and if they're gonna be gray and old. Like, that's what that reminded me of. Like, he had something to get off his chest.
I just want to quickly apologize.
But it wasn't on my radar at all. Like,
oh, no, of course not. Just a quick correction. I know. I think I said Adam Hausman, Nick Hausman. Sorry.
Okay.
Nick.
Yeah. No worries.
Just so people don't yell.
I didn't know who he was until CM Punk started. Like,
yeah, I just did a quick Google. I was like, oh, wait a minute. This is a guy's name.
That's okay.
Looking at his Twitter. Okay. Yeah. But so apparently, like you said, he had a little beef with him there. And obviously Punk knew about Hausman's improv with Colt Cabana.
Yep.
So right after him, didn't waste any time. Boom. Shots fired.
I just, again, this just wasn't on my radar. What? So
were you sitting
Mike, let's do this. Let me put that audio here.
go.
A lot of people.
Just say your name and your...
Cool. Hi, Nick Housman with Wrestling Inc.
I'll start, Nick. Show of hands. Who here fancies themselves as a journalist? You're a journalist, Nick?
All right. I try my best.
Okay. No, real quick.
Go ahead.
You still do improv?
No, not a little bit.
No?
No.
When you did improv, who'd you do improv with?
I did it with Scott Colton.
Hmm. Okay, so you fancy yourself a journalist. Would you say you're friends with Scott Colton?
No, I haven't talked to Scott in some time.
So you're not friends with him?
No. Scott and I do not see eye to eye.
Oh, wow. Well, that makes two of us. My point is...
If you fancy yourself a journalist, even if it's for the silly world of professional wrestling, and you have journalistic integrity, people who report things, mostly that are bullshit and slanderous lies against myself, if you are friends with somebody, you blew my spot. If you're not friends with them, I apologize. But you should probably disclose who you're friends with. I haven't had anything to do with Scott Colton in almost a decade. Probably wanted nothing to do with him even longer than that. It's fucking unfortunate that I have to come up here and speak on this when I'm on my time and this is a fucking business. Why I'm a grown-ass adult man and I decide not to be friends with somebody is nobody else's fucking business. But my friends, if I fall backwards, will catch me. Scott Colton, I felt, never would have. My problem was I wanted to bring a guy with me to the top that did not want to see me at the top. Okay? You call it jealousy. You call it envy. Whatever the fuck it is. My relationship with Scott Colton ended long before I paid all of his bills. I have every receipt. I have every invoice. I have every email. I have the email where he says, and I quote, "I agree to go our separate ways. I will get my own lawyer and you do not have to pay anymore." That's an email that I have. The only reason the public did not see is because when I finally had to countersue him through discovery, we discovered he shared a bank account with his mother. That's a fact. And as soon as we discovered that fact and we subpoenaed old Marsha, he sent the email, "Oh, can we please drop all this?" Now, it's 2022. I haven't been friends with this guy since at least 2014, late 2013. And the fact that I have to sit up here because we have irresponsible people who call themselves EVPs and couldn't fucking manage a target, and they spread lies and bullshit and put into a media that I got somebody fired when I have fuck all to do with him, want nothing to do with him, do not care where he works, where he doesn't work, where he eats, where he sleeps. And the fact that I have to get up here and do this in 2022 is fucking embarrassing. And if y'all are at fault, fuck you. If you're not, I apologize. But what did I ever do in this world to deserve an empty-headed fucking dumb fuck like Hangman Adam Page to go out on national television and fucking go into business for himself? For what? What did I do? Dave, what did I ever do? Didn't do a goddamn thing. What's your name, sir? Fuck the Pittsburgh Penguins. What are you doing, man? What are you doing?
I made it really clear in Forbes, and I just want to make it clear again. Nick,
it's not his position to make it very fucking clear. There's people who call themselves EVPs that should have fucking known better. This shit was none of their business. I understand sticking up for your fucking friends. I fucking get it. I stuck up for that guy more than anybody. Okay? I paid his bills. Until I didn't, and it was my decision not to.
Yeah, but I shouldn't have no commented when Nick first said it. It's my fault. And if I hadn't, it's my fault. It's my fault.
I appreciate
it. I should have just taken a head on because you never said
anything. But I'm trying to run a fucking business. And when somebody who hasn't done a damn thing in this business jeopardizes the first $1 million house that this company has ever drawn off of my back and goes on national television and does that, it's a disgrace to this industry. It's a disgrace to this company. Now, we're far beyond apologies. Right. I gave him a fucking chance. It did not get handled. And you saw what I had to do, which is very regrettable, lowering myself to his fucking level. But that's where we're at right now. And I will still walk up and down this hallway and say, if you have a fucking problem with me, take it up with me. Let's fucking go. What's your question, Nick?
Why is MJF back in the fold now? How do you both feel about him being around? How do you feel about the time he spent away? All of that.
Well, if I may, I am the one who asked him to come back because MJF's a big star in this company, and this is one of the biggest events. A year ago, CM Punk debuted here, and I thought it was right for the fans. And like I said, for the fans, I thought the best thing that we could do as a company was bring MJF back.
Because he wants me to work with pricks constantly. That's what it is.
Nevertheless, two of the top wrestlers in the world, MJF and CM Punk, could be a big match down the line.
Sorry to keep bringing this fucking up, but I've never spoken his word, and I don't know how long, so I'm a little fucking pissed off about it. When it came down that he was going to sue me, I asked to talk to him. He refused. I asked for mediation. It was denied. I offered him money. He said it was not enough. He went ahead with the lawsuit and sued. It's his fucking funeral. I don't care. He shares a bank account with his mother. It tells you all you need to know about what kind of character that is. I appreciate it, Nick. I'm sorry if I'm a little fucking snippy. I'm hurt and I'm old and I'm fucking tired and I work with fucking children.
I regret not answering your question the first time you asked it. Yeah, but I should have just taken a head on like I did with Blake and Forbes recently.
We're all learning here, Tony. It's okay.
Thanks, Phil.
I'll tell you why I'm upset about it. It's because if you're an EVP, you don't try to middle your top babyface. Try to get your niche audience that's on the internet to hate him for some made up bullshit rumor. Really pisses me off. Stepping on your own dick, trying to fucking, you know, make money, sell tickets, fill arenas. And these stupid guys think they're in Reseda.
Yep. Dominic D'Angelo, adfreeshows.com. Punk, last time we were here last year, I asked you about like Terry Funk and his influence, like the legacy going on. Kind of, and this is for you too, Tony. I kind of like, you've done a great job with incorporating legends throughout, you know, the course of AEW and as it goes on. I kind of want to see what you feel about how a lot of the modern talent today can kind of utilize some of the advice and take advice from like guys like William Regal and even like Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone. I know I'm missing Jake Roberts, plenty I'm missing, I'm sure. But I just kind of want to get both your perspectives on that and how that can kind of go a little bit more to help you guys out grow as a company.
We have a locker room full of pretty brilliant minds, you know, Jerry Lynn, Dean Malenko, Mark Henry. You know, when I came back and I cut my promo my second week here, I thought it was pretty decent. You know what I mean? Kind of blur the lines a little bit. What's he doing? How crazy Phil. He's going into business for himself. And really, I was just defending myself. But, you know, you mix that in with attacking Moxley and mention, you know, Kingston being the second best Kingston, which is pretty great line. But our locker room, for all the wisdom and brilliance it has, isn't worth shit when you have an empty-headed idiot who's never done anything in the business do public interviews and say, I don't really take advice. Who the fuck do you think you are? You know, that's stupid. I'm on a team with Barry Bonds, Mark McGuire, Sammy Sosa, and I don't need to work on my swing. I'm not going to listen to these guys. They're going to tell me how to swing a baseball. Fucking go fuck yourself. That's how I feel about it. I dare you to fucking say that to Terry Funk's face. I don't need to listen to you, Mr. Funk. I know what I'm doing. Fucking grow up. And the reason I've never defended myself is because when you do, it just sounds like you're being defensive. But I've eaten shit on this subject for a very, very long time. I'm very sad today that I had to get up here and say his name. He doesn't fucking deserve it. And talk about it. But facts are facts, you know. Name two people that have made the most money off the name CM Punk. I don't think you're there yet. The first one's Vince McMahon. The second one's Scott Colton. I hope you all have a good night. Please be more responsible with the news you get from certain people. And just remember, we're human beings. Thank you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
So that's the audio. That's the chunk that I've edited down, like to the best of my abilities, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's just a lot. There's a lot of cussing. I'm not bleeping them out because I don't think our podcast goes on the HD2 channel anymore. So I don't have to worry about FCC guidance on that, which is a blessing because now I could curse like a sailor, curse or whatever. I'm not going to. I'm going to choose not to. So, Mike, you have, before I talk about what I know about what happened in the locker room, you wanted to interrogate me about this media press conference thing?
Yes. Because you were there, I want to hear okay, let's start with us. When CM Punk went after Nick Hausman, I know you said you put your hand up, you were nervous on the journalist thing. Were you sitting next to anyone or were you by yourself?
I know
you
there were four rows of chairs and I was fourth row sitting by myself.
Okay. So
there may have been 12 writers, reporters, journalists in the room, might have been 12.
So having been in the media scrum before with you and other press conferences throughout my career as well, I always like to kind of get a look around the room with reaction when there is a question being asked to the specific athlete, talent, whatever. Did you take a look around the room what everyone's reaction was when Punk went right for Hausman?
I think everybody leaned in. Wow. I know I did. I leaned in and I was like, what is, because I didn't know about this, and it just, again, CM Punk, Colt Cabana just wasn't on my radar.
Okay.
Did
you also notice too, because I always try to look at this, especially where this, again, not on your radar and I'm sure not on AEW's radar, did you notice the PR people trying to panic as well, grabbing the microphone away or
they let it go. They let it all go.
Wow. Interesting. All right.
And we both know the PR people there. They're really good. They all let it go.
There was cool.
no taking microphones away, no cutting people off, no.
Wow.
It all happened.
Okay. Now, the other thing with the, and we'll talk about this one later.
Which, by the way, a credit to them.
Yeah.
A credit to them to let it all go.
Sure.
There's something to be said that why Tony Khan is there. And Tony Khan's facial expressions were of great concern.
Oh,
like I don't think he saw this coming. I didn't want to overuse the line there because I've overused it a bunch of times about bingo cards. But I don't think he saw this coming. And there are different times where Tony Khan would be answering a question and Punk would cut him off and go back to the Colt Cabana stuff or the EVP stuff or whatever.
Right.
And that's mind blowing to me. But like Tony Khan's facial expressions are like, what is this?
Yeah. And there are a ton of Tony Khan, what do they call them? GIFs, GIFs, memes, all that, all over social media today with his reaction and so forth. Now, when did you notice the security guard running?
Yes.
Did. Okay.
I did because one of the PR people went after him later left the room later.
Okay, what was everyone's reaction?
And it wasn't to get another talent.
All right.
Because when I saw the security guy go, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Because it's not like he calmly walked out. Like, he was out. He was gone.
Yeah.
So that was now on my radar that there's something, and I don't know what that something was. But I've never seen a security guy zip out of a press room before.
Yeah. Okay. Now, so obviously the press room is not too far away from the locker room area.
So I also heard a weird banging, but that could have been food services. That could have been that. Because I think if you walk out the door of the media room and went down the hallway, it's probably like the third door on the left.
Okay.
Their locker room. And I'm just using second door, third door on the right. I don't know. Right. But it's pretty close by. And I say that because the reporting is that the Young Bucks were supposed to do a press avail and then they weren't.
Okay.
And I didn't know who was coming out. I just know that Tony Khan was texting Chris Jericho asking him to come to the media avail. Now, which I thought was a little weird, but it without the context of there was just a fight in the locker room.
Okay.
So I didn't know that.
Okay, because I, in a second,
I'll tell you why I think the Young Bucks got canceled from that.
Okay, all right, yeah. So, okay, now the thing with the phone there, because the other thing I saw is that Khan didn't have his phone. So he didn't know about. He did. Okay, so
he had it right on his desk. Now I don't know if he had it facing up or facing down.
Okay,
but when they were, I think it was after Tony Storm. He said something about like, "Oh, let me text Chris Jericho and get him in here."
And you know what? I think that may have been the.
Looked at it, and because I went back and I watched as best I could, and right. I'm looking at him, and he's swiping this way, he's swiping this way, he's typing in, you know, and he's talking, he's saying like, "Oh, I'll text Jericho," and Jericho came in like a few minutes later, and Jericho had like this calming presence.
Yes, he did.
I bet we'd find out that Jericho was in the room.
So
so there was an audible called. Yeah. Because I don't know. I didn't have, you know, who was going to be available to us. Mm-hmm. I didn't ask. I just kind of was, you know, going with it. And so Jericho comes in. I'm like, yeah, Jericho comes in. He's a big, you know, he's a good talker, but he came in with a very calming influence, very nice, very polite. Like Jericho gave some great nuggets about his Lionheart character and how it came to be and all that stuff. And right. I'm like, this is great. This is great stuff that's going to get forgotten about because CM Punk just ranted about Colt Cabana and the EVPs. And Tony Khan is complaining that he's getting David Crockett treatment when he's got more money than David Crockett.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I think there's still like a lot of wrestlers in professional wrestling who don't get along. And now it's more apparent than ever that there are those things. But I also think that the industry has thrived on creative tension for a long time. And then you might say, well, what if it doesn't manifest itself in a match right away? And I also think that, you know, as I mentioned other times this weekend, when in the 90s, which is arguably the all-time business peak and interest peak, and really, I think just the general peak of pro wrestling in many ways, the late 90s and early 2000s, like, you know, there was certainly a big, big group of pro wrestlers who did not like each other. There were a lot of people who didn't get along, and a lot of times they weren't even in the same companies and they would rip each other. And it was certainly not going to produce a match. But that is what we produce, is wrestling matches. And there are a lot of matches between people who probably don't get along and don't like each other. And it's not always an easy road to get people in the ring. But when you can get people in the ring to settle their differences in the ring, it can be really exciting. There's a lot of conversation about people not getting along, not liking each other. I definitely think that it's probably more apparent than ever that there's a lot of that. I don't like everything either. You know, people, I don't like everything people say. And there's people that have said things pretty blatantly, even people that like work here that have just gone out and slammed me blatantly in public. And there's only so much of it I'll take. I'm a pretty nice guy and I'm very flexible. You know, it's nice being home. As a segue, being here, seeing a lot of my friends, I have a pretty calm demeanor generally with people, and I'm willing to put up with a lot of abuse. Something that came up while I was doing an interview this week was one of the guys that interviewed me while I was in town. He went to the University of Illinois, and we kind of put together that I had bartended for him many, many times and served him many drinks over the years when I was a bartender in college. I have a demeanor of service. I try to service people, and that includes the wrestling fans. I will go around and ask if I can help somebody. I will gladly offer somebody a hand or pour somebody a drink or whatever I need to do to make somebody feel better. But there's only so much slamming me and knocking me I can put up with. But on the other hand, I will do like what's right for business when I have to. And so I think, you know, to be honest, when people don't get along, people don't like each other, I think I've been probably had people saying about as much stuff about me over the last few months as anybody. And sometimes you just have to take it and move on with business. And that's a part of it. given the competition that we've never faced before, this is kind of an unprecedented marker in my opinion, but it's still the number is the number and I have to face the competition out there. But when I compared myself to Jim Crockett Promotions this weekend, I think I got a taste of the same medicine Jim Crockett Promotions took, but I have a lot more fucking money than Jim Crockett did. And I'm not going to get, I'm serious. I'm not going to sit back and take this fucking shit.
You know, you look at, you see your biggest, without a doubt, your biggest star, your biggest mainstream attraction, and he goes off the rails a little bit towards your EVPs, another one of your big, one of your big young stars. And you, as the leader of the ship, how do you try the best to fuse the entire situation?
That is a dicey situation, and it is contentious and frankly challenging, but I have to do what's best for the sake of the company. And everybody you're talking about are great professional wrestlers with big reputations, people that and some of them have been around from the beginning of the company. Some of them have been around just for about a year now. But the fact is, these are people that drive revenue and they help create jobs for everyone. So I'm not going to comment on what you may have heard here. But the fact is, like I've said earlier this week, it's no secret a lot of professional wrestlers don't like each other. But I think now it's probably more out in the open than it's been in a while. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing for the pro wrestling business, given what the product that we produce is, and it's wrestling matches, and it involves tension and people wanting to fight. And people know there's a lot of people that want to fight each other around here now, and I don't think that's terrible.
Jericho kind of, too, if you listen to him in the presser, or you obviously heard him, but he did make a line. He said something along the lines of to hold people accountable. Right.
Yep.
And that reminded me a lot of back in the day when The Undertaker was the leader in the locker room. So maybe it will be Jericho. Maybe it is Jericho, kind of that guy there. And I wouldn't be surprised, James, if you see him make the jump to a VP role.
Jericho has gone on the record and said he doesn't want it. He just wants to be a talent, and he talks to Tony about ideas, and that's it.
But I mean, if you
Jim
get
Ross
that leadership,
has been on the. Jim Ross has been on the record saying similar things. Like Tony Khan wanted to make Jericho and JR VPs, and they both declined it because they didn't want the extra hassle and the extra paperwork.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, Jericho, I think, obviously is a very close lieutenant, if you will, advisor.
Oh, yeah.
Tony Khan. So he's too valuable to, you know, obviously let not to offer that situation to him right there. And he's been around for a long time, knows the guys. He is a talent. He can kind of control the room a little bit. So he was definitely the most calming presence of that press conference, I guess you could say.
Oh, definitely. And, definitely. Right? Chris Jericho came in there and just. Like,
yeah, he was.
He essentially grabbed a side headlock and sat in it.
Yeah, I was, there you go. Yeah, and he was very good. Yeah, so that okay. I just wanted to get your reaction on that there for how everyone reacted with the security and so forth. If you heard anything else, all that stuff. Those are my questions to you there. But let's hear the dirt.
So, all of that led to a fist fight in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
As the media scrum broke up and Tony Khan was ushered off, I got word that there was a fist fight in the locker room. That's how it was described to me. This is from somebody who was in the room. And the timeline is this happened while the tag team champions were talking and doing media. Don't tweet this. Don't put this on your social media. This is just word of mouth to your friends. Tell them to download the podcast if they want to hear this whole thing. Okay. If I see this stuff, this is my disclaimer all the time. If I see this stuff on social media, I'll stop doing it. Thankfully you guys have kept to that rule.
Yeah. It's been
so good. Here's what it is. And I haven't seen this reported yet as of noontime on Monday. That sound right?
Yeah.
Boston time. Sure. It was basically CM Punk and Ace Steel against the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. And it was more Matt than Nick. I was told that Ace Steel actually bit Kenny Omega.
Oh my gosh.
I was told that CM Punk actually got hurt, and CM Punk actually mentioned that he's hurt in the press conference, got hurt during the match with Moxley, and all of the combatants in this locker room brawl got hurt in some form or fashion. And part of the message was Wednesday should be really interesting as far as who's available for the show, whether it's due to injury or suspension. The same person told me that CM Punk and Ace Steel should get fired for all of this.
Wow.
And this is also a person, to be clear, that has an anti-CM Punk agenda.
Okay. Thank you.
So just to be clear,
Just
to be clear.
Right.
So that's the intel that I have that I feel kind of good about. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows, again, somebody with an anti CM Punk agenda has told me this. But Tony Khan said in the scrum that the money that the talent brings in overrides the locker room issues.
Mm.
Like he gave a really deep answer in a couple different questions that maybe I'll post produce and put in here.
Yeah.
About like the value, like, so people don't get along at their jobs, there's still more money to be made. But what this does is the story should be, we should be talking, Mike, that CM Punk won the world title in Chicago and he's back, and CM Punk walked into the room and made it something else.
Exactly.
And that's on him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what to do with that, right? Like he does the speech after the pay-per-view goes off the air. It's like 24 seconds. And he's like, yeah, I don't want to keep you here any longer than the 72-hour pay-per-view. And like, he's now the world champion. He's still miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about journalism and checking things. And, but like, is he available? Like if I were to go through my phone, can I like send CM Punk a DM and be like, hey, I heard this. Mm-hmm. Because last week he's talking to Justin Barrasso, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago. And CM Punk is like, I'm not addressing every rumor that's going on. And he shouldn't.
Yeah.
I will say this, and this is a dicey thing for me to actually say. I don't know who's right or wrong. Colt Cabana, CM Punk, the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega. I don't know. I'm not there. But I do know that Colt Cabana has a history of talking about people and speaking untruths into the world.
Mm.
And this pertains to, how can I put this without getting in trouble? I know that he made comments to people about a friend of mine about putting over the locker room.
Oh.
I think that's a safe way to say it.
Yeah.
And they were untrue.
It can always be edited out.
But so like knowing that piece of information, it's like, I don't know who's telling. I don't know. I'm not there.
Yeah.
This is the information that I have from people who I trust.
Yeah.
And I put the caveat out there that the person who told me about what happened in the locker room last night, allegedly, is an anti CM Punk guy.
Okay.
Or gal.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, that's interesting. And you know what?
A much lesser nugget, by the way, is Ruby Soho just has a broken nose. That's a much lesser nugget.
Oh, I thought it was a lot
concern over Ruby Soho.
Thought it was a lot worse. Looked like a lot worse injury, a neck.
But she's good other than a broken nose. That's a little detail that isn't germane to anything of this conversation. But
well, good. That's a lot better news.
Love Ruby Soho.
Yeah, you're a big fan of hers. Yeah. I just look at this whole thing here where you have an event in your hometown.
Can I just jump in here for a second, Mike? And I'm sorry.
Yeah, good.
But like, so CM Punk is a huge Bret Hart fan, right?
He paid homage to him in the outfit.
Plagiarized it probably. And so remember, research is stealing from many. Plagiarism is stealing from one. Yeah. So this is Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels in 97. Yeah. And Tony Khan's letting it happen because he finds it interesting and he gets people talking about it. But I would say that I'm pretty well read on wrestling. I'm pretty, you know, this isn't me self-serving, but like if I'm pretty well read on wrestling and this Colt Cabana EVP snitching thing comes up and I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
Then you're going too deep into the well. You're going too far down this rabbit hole of like the clickbait world, the Twitter world. I was at I was at a bar on last Sunday afternoon getting pizza, like deep dish pizza. It was great pizza.
Lou Malnati's, right?
And yes, that's exactly where it was.
Love it there.
They
great
tweeted
place.
It was awesome.
Yeah, like, they're the best.
That pizza and that dessert did things to my mouth, Mike Riley, that haven't been done in a long time. Just amazing.
All right.
Like the way that the sauce just explodes into your mouth. Like, oh yeah, great. And the sausage, the sausage was amazing going into my mouth.
Nice.
So I tried so hard to keep it straight.
Insert show, Carrie. Yep. Go ahead.
But I was, there was one other person in the bar and he had a Rouge shirt on. So I instantly didn't like him. And, but he kept talking, right? He kept talking. And this says the internet, and this says the internet. And I stopped him and I said, look, we're at a bar. This is real life. This is not Twitter. Like, here's the reason why this, this, and this happened. And he was just kind of like blown away. Like, Twitter is not real life, people. Twitter is a percentage of fans. The real fans that matter and don't, and I sat in the crowd with them. We had our bitches about the pay-per-view last night, but Twitter and people are just like, they're so far deep into the Twitter opinion, including, I think, Tony Khan. Mm. But Twitter is such a small percentage of the non-paying wrestling audience.
Yep.
So like, while you should be aware of that, that shouldn't dictate your booking or your opinion or your frustrations, right? So that's just kind of like, there's the real world and then there's the Twitter social media world. And they're two very different places.
Oh, yeah.
Like, realistically, Mike, and again, this is something I shouldn't say out loud, but I said it to somebody recently, like, there needs to be, like, there needs to be more accountability for the words that you say.
Oh, yeah.
And if not, like, somebody deserves a good punch in the face.
And you better be careful. You better dot the I's and cross the T's. Make sure you're confident putting it out there and so forth.
Or just having a conversation with somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, not everything that's on the internet is true.
Right.
And there's also context for why decisions are made.
I mean, listen, there are people that have multiple Twitter accounts pretending to be other people and so forth, right?
Mind blowing.
It's amazing. I mean, God love it. You have that time of the world. Yeah. There you go.
I mean, my account I use less and less now.
Right.
The Felger and Maz Twitter account is my burner account, just to retweet my stuff or put a poll up every once in a while, or Maz or whatever.
Good follow.
And then I have like a locked burner account, just in case somebody has blocked me and I need to see their information.
Ah, interesting. Yeah.
But good. Like, there are no tweets, there's no followers, there's no, I just put in somebody's name and who has blocked me or blocked me.
Do a little investigation.
And I see what they've said about me or what they've said about a certain topic or whatever.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. There you go. I just look at the, you know, what,
so,
one thing.
So I guess the Brett Sean thing, like I actually asked the person who told me about the fight and Ace Steel biting Kenny Omega.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, tell me that CM Punk pulled out Kenny Omega's hair, because then we have Bret and Shawn from 97 where Bret Hart pulled out Shawn Michaels' hair.
Yep.
And that didn't happen. But like, I went through, and I think I said this on a text with you and Scott Isaacs, who we can now say his name.
Yeah, say it twice in a week.
News director at Channel 10 in Providence.
WJAR.
Turn to 10.
Wait a minute. I hope it's WJAR.
If not, whatever. Yeah, I've screwed up during this podcast anyway. But I think I said in real time, like, it wouldn't shock me if Eddie Kingston took a swing at him at CM Punk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when CM Punk cut a promo, Eddie Kingston goes to Twitter and says, of course, the word I can't say starts with a C.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he says what he says when I'm not there. So, like, Eddie Kingston's a candidate to pop him in the mouth, right? He took a swing at Sammy Guevara.
Yeah, right. And that's just,
So there's that.
Track record.
Right? Yep. Like,
yeah.
Moxley, I could see Moxley. So I think CM Punk and Moxer are good. I think Moxley just got tied up in the moment 2 weeks ago. Because I looked at that and was like, wow, he really hurt him. Like, he really laid him in.
Right.
And I think that was just amped up, and that was in the heat of the moment. But I feel like Moxley and Punk are good.
Yeah, yeah. I think so, too. I think there's no issue there. We would have heard more about it, especially with CM Punk's little agenda there that he had going into that media scrum on Sunday night, where essentially, James, say what you want, Tony Khan might be licking his chops on this for entertainment and so forth, but quite frankly, it's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing. You do that in your hometown of Chicago, you win the world title there, and to go on an agenda for Colt Cabana and to have your other agenda from 2 weeks ago with Hangman Page and to bring that out here, and I get it. Tony Khan is, he likes the stuff. He likes the entertainment. He likes the Brett Shawn, like you made the reference to 25 years later. But if this is real stuff happening behind the scenes, which I do believe it is, if I'm Tony Khan, I'd try to clean this up as soon as possible. Otherwise, you will literally have the inmates running the asylum. And it is evident that Triple H is in Tony Khan's head. And Tony 100%. Khan, right? And Tony Khan made that very clear at that media scrum that he didn't like being that third show on the weekend. Yep. And like I said last week here on the show, that say what you want, but I think he has a big belief that Tony Khan is a big reason why we had all those wrestling shows this past weekend on Labor Day weekend. And Triple H said, no, checkmate. We're going international and we're going first. And now you get a one-up, try to one-up us here. And he is in his head. So if that's the case, if you can't clean up the trash behind the scenes there, we already saw what happened with Cody Rhodes. If you can't make everyone happy, you could see the rise and fall of AEW sooner than later.
And that's so I don't think that they're going anywhere yet. But the Cody departure, Kevin Owens not going there, those are two moments, and we've more recently discussed them. Those are really when the pendulum shifted.
Yep.
I really think that the momentum for WWE, if AEW didn't come close ratings wise, like they had some small victories here and there. And I think that they're still running at a good business rate, but they've got a new TV deal coming up. They've had to kind of tone down their language a little bit. Mm-hmm. All of this, like I said this to somebody last night, this morning, whenever.
Yep.
I said, isn't the goal to, like, they're carnies, right? These wrestlers are carnies, right? The idea is you put up the tent, you entertain the people, you go home, you get paid.
Yep.
Don't they realize that the goal is to work together to make the most money possible and then go home to the family and be like, hey, I'm not hurt. Like, I'm good.
Right.
Like, it's entertainment. It's not real, like...
Well, and that's what Tony Khan even said too. Like like you just said in the presser, like, hey, we may all not get along behind the scenes, but we're here to make money. And I think you're right. Yeah, that's what it should be, the goal. But when you get personal and start acting like a bunch of 5-year-olds behind the scenes and causing tension and making other people uncomfortable, you could see a bolt for the exit.
So Scott Isaacs on our group text sent, if it'll just load up here. Jim Valley, who I believe works for the Wrestling Observer newsletter radio show.
Okay.
He said, assuming this is real, it's real, Jim. It's very real.
It's real. Yep.
Tony Khan could be on a yacht. Instead, he loves wrestling so much, he gave talent a new place, a new viable place to work. And some are making more money than they would anywhere else. And by the way, that counts for both organizations. So Tony Khan coming in gave WWE talent more money.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that these wrestlers treat Tony Khan, it spits in his face.
Yeah.
And the comment below was funny. It was, a year ago, Punk, I'm here to help and work with the young talent like Terry Funk and ECW. CM Punk, now I work with children. Except Adam Cole, who he loves.
Right, right.
Because he made a point to shout out Adam Cole, who I think everybody loves Adam Cole.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know one part, like, they're like, for a long time, I didn't understand Adam Cole completely, mm-hmm. but like the guy's like one of the nicest people you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
He's
a likable guy.
Very likable guy. And Britt Baker, I love too.
Oh, yeah.
DMD. Yeah. There we go.
There it is.
So do you want to talk about the actual show?
Yeah, let's go. I mean, yeah, this is just fascinating behind the scenes stuff here. And
but is that- it though, Mike? Because this was my debate, right? And I say this because I was out in Chicago, a bunch of my wrestling friends. I came back early morning to the hotel after the media scrum, and a bunch of my friends were in the lobby. Just we were all having a good time.
Sure.
And I came back and I was like, oh yeah, there was a fist fight in the locker room after the show. And the group of, say, 12, 13 people, only one of them was like, oh, there was a fist fight?
No real.
So 11 or 12 of them didn't care.
Yep.
Like, they're kind of like, oh, there was a fist fight. Okay, whatever. And so this is my antenna going up and being like, mm-hmm. Do the 10,000 people at the Sears Center, what percentage of them cares that there was an issue in the locker room?
Well, okay. Yes.
Right? And this is what I don't know. Like, this is interesting to me because I lived it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's necessarily interesting to the listener out there. I think it is because I'm a fan and I'm like, dude, get your act together. Like, this is a business. Go out there, work together, and make money.
Right.
Because sometimes, Mike, you have to understand that the superior talent is also going to draw money. So like you have to kind of work around that.
Of course.
Right. And I know that CM Punk has been really good to me over the course of since I met him in an armory in Cambridge or Wakefield or whatever.
Yep.
But I also know that there are stories where he's not so good to people. And I feel like I should share those with the caveat of like, this is an anti-CM Punk person, but CM Punk has really treated me well. Like, he did an interview on Tutcher and Rich years ago, and it ended up in his DVD. And I'm forever grateful for that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
For all that cool stuff. Like, he was great to me in Chicago in 2019 and so on and so on.
Sure.
But like, I hear all these stories and now the stories are coming from different people. But then CM Punk goes out there and is like, yeah, your EVPs are, you know, leaking this stuff out. And CM Punk is disrespecting a vice president who's his boss, the owner of the company who's right there, and Tony Khan doesn't step in to stop it. He lets it go. The PR team kept letting it go too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so confusing because, there was a point where Tony Khan like was trying to apologize for it. And CM Punk's like, no, Tony, we're still learning here. If I said that to my boss,
yeah, you'd be done. That'd be it. And I
said something similar to that to my market manager once when I worked at EEI, and I almost got terminated the next day.
Okay, there you go. So you got to be careful.
I told her that I didn't think she handled something the right way.
It's just really okay. Well, I you know what? I just look at it this way where, you know, Tony Khan is not disciplining everyone here, anyone in general for that matter.
Well, he suspended Eddie Kingston, supposedly.
Yeah, but he'll let the guys like CM Punk get away with it because he makes too much money for the company and he knows he can get away with murder. And Kenny Omega and Adam Page and the Young Bucks, all those guys, he ain't going to touch them. But Eddie Kingston, he knows he can put his little thumb on top of him there and still threaten him because, hey, listen, without me, Eddie Kingston, you ain't going anywhere, so you better behave. But a guy like CM Punk, he's got too much power, Young Bucks, Page, all that stuff. It is absolute. It's a cluster, you know what? And I'm not trying to. Well, you know, I will compare it. The hell with it. You compare WWE to AEW. If that happened in WWE, that wouldn't fly there. It just wouldn't. And I can also tell you this. You know this, James. Watch the. I know we'll talk about this in the Clash of the Castle review show, but night and day with the press conference there, that stuff doesn't happen in the WWE. No. Right?
Up in WWE.
So this right here, this is just a circus. All right? And for CM Punk to do that there, you know what? Maybe we as the fans are getting worked on. Maybe we are.
No, this was very real, Mike.
Well,
hold on. Out there that this is the work. Yeah, it's not.
It's real. Like, let me rephrase that. It's real, but we as the fans are eating into it. We're feeding into it, and it keeps enabling them to do more. And Tony Khan is okay with that. And that's the issue there.
Because he thinks all the publicity is the best publicity. And him as a fan, growing up on the Meltzer newsletter and stuff like that.
Yeah, he's all for that.
Yeah, he likes it, eats it up. Let's talk about the matches here.
Woo!
So we'll start with the main event, which I thought was really good. CM Punk wins the world championship over John Moxley. There were two specific things that I really liked about this match. The first one was the opening sequence, where it looked like Punk was going to win in 90 seconds or 2 minutes or whatever the timing was. I love that. I actually fell for it. When Punk hit the first go to sleep, I'm like, he just won the title.
Do you know why you fell for it?
They're going to do it, and they'll do, and they'll, because storytelling, brother.
It happened on Dynamite, exactly. Yeah. And it worked. They got it us. Worked. They
it
got worked. Us.
It got me. I can't speak for anybody else.
No, it got me too. Yeah, I was on the edge of my seat. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Right? Boom.
And I'm like, oh, this is brilliant. Because then they'll do the third match and they'll do like a time limit draw or something like that. They'll just they'll do that to F with us.
There you go.
So that was one. The second thing that I really loved about this match was the finish.
Mm-hmm.
Punk hits the go to sleep on Moxley. And Moxley hits off the ropes and lands right on Punk. And there's a build of anticipation of, is CM Punk going to hit a Moxley with a second one?
Mm-hmm.
And he ultimately did, but there was like this rise of anticipation because they took their time. Like, we thought Moxley was done, but Moxley's not getting up after three go to sleeps. We don't think. And that was Moxley's first clean pinfall loss in AEW, according to Tony Khan last night at the press conference.
Right.
And CM Punk's like, really? That's true? Which I thought was a, which is amazing when you think about it.
Yep.
So those were my two observations from that CM Punk championship win last night. Mike, what were yours?
Another thing too, I'm with you on those as well. Another thing, it's usually Moxley that bleeds, and this was CM Punk with all the blood on this one here. So that was another big factor right there as well. You hit the nail on the head with the early near fall there. And again, credit to AEW. They got me with the Dynamite stuff, and that's how I thought it would be right there. But for John Moxley to step in for what he did there, to be the interim unified AEW champion for a little bit, he did a fine job. And now to have CM Punk have this title back to be the AEW champion, it looks like all indications are that it's going to be MJF going for him right away. And MJF with his debut, or sorry, re-emergence, if you will, I thought that was really well played as well. But a good match here, and it was a long show. 14 matches.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, so you could speak to that firsthand. Yeah, you must have been drained.
A little tired.
Yeah. But good finish there. I liked it.
I noticed that the crowd was... let's go Moxley, CM Punk. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like 70-30 in favor of Punk.
Ah.
I don't know if that came across on TV, but that's how it felt in the building.
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned MJF. After the Punk win, the lights go out in the building. They play a voice message from Tony Khan to MJF.
Mm-hmm.
MJF comes out as the masked Joker. Now, MJF was the Joker in the opening match for the casino ladder match. He had a group who essentially won the match for him, didn't take off the mask to open up, but to close out the show he did.
Yep.
The group was a group similar to what MJF's group was in Evolve.
Yes.
I don't remember the name of it, but it doesn't matter. It's probably like the Dream Team or something like that. But MJF got a massive return pop. One that I kind of expected, but I didn't think it was going to last. But MJF's back. It's him against CM Punk. I assume it's happening at Grand Slam.
Probably.
That seems to make the most sense. And CM Punk called MJF a prick.
Yeah.
You want me working with these pricks all the time? These angry pricks all the time?
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm like, does that mean Punk's dropping the title and he already knows it? Or is MJF not get the title? Like, I don't know what they do with this.
And by the way, can I just go to the, I know we'll talk about the ladder match, but when you knew the Joker, did you know it was MJF?
Yeah, his cadence.
Because he flipped out the crowd.
The cadence of how he was walking down the aisle. The cadence of how he got into the ring.
Yeah.
I was open to the idea that it may have been Matt Cardona. I was open to the idea that the actual Joker, when it was revealed, wasn't going to be the same person who walked to the ring.
Right.
But MJF seemed like the obvious choice.
Right. And that's once he flipped off the crowd, I was like, okay, that's got to be him.
And again, Mike, I wonder if part of Punk's rant was about the Bucks and whoever else leaking this to the media.
Mm.
Because I was on the plane to Chicago.
Oh, yes, that's right.
And I got my first, what do you think if MJF comes back on Sunday? Right. And I'm like, come on. Like, yeah. Can I be surprised?
Right, right. Yeah.
Because I think I sent that to you in real time.
You did. You did.
I haven't even landed yet. And I'm asked if I like the MJF thing. Like, you know, these are my problems, right? Like, I'm being a jerk saying this, but so I assume it's Punk and MJF at Grand Slam in Queens, New York in mid September.
Yep.
I don't know what you do.
I don't know what you do. So here's the thing now. So obviously Punk wins in Chicago there. And now with the return of MJF, which I did not see happening, you still got to keep Punk the face. You can't put MJF, that's New York for him too. It's his hometown.
Yeah. So Chris Jericho said something really interesting in the post-scrum about how he thinks that MJF eventually is going to be a game changer babyface.
Game changer.
Game changer.
He's definitely
even loosely compared him to Rock and Austin when they turned.
Wow. See.
So
if that's coming from Jericho, that's big.
Right. And Jericho loves MJF.
Yeah.
Jericho probably talks more highly of Maxwell Jacob Friedman than probably Max is comfortable with. Because MJF has done a really good job of protecting this character. And Jericho's like, oh, no, I like Max. I like Max a lot. And, you know, all this. I mean, Jericho's great when he's talking about the business, I think, even if he thinks he's created it.
Right.
Do you have anything else on MJF, the Punk, Moxley stuff?
MJF right there coming out at the end. I will say this from a standpoint for the show that I, you know, saw on replay there. And I'd like your reaction on this too, James, with it being such a long show. Did it kind of feel like, hot air taken out of the balloon when MJF came out? Because the crowd reaction to it, I didn't think it was as hot as it may have came off on TV when he came out.
Oh, that that building was loud, Mike.
That building was
really loud.
Now, hold on. I'm just saying, like, I think that there were so many matches where at the end of the show, the end of the event, like, oh, man, wow, we're still getting more here. And here's MJF who comes out. Like, now we're almost ready for round two. Let's go. You guys, did you have that adrenaline or were you guys done?
I think the acclaimed match.
Great match.
I think the acclaimed losing brought the air out of the room. There are some Jamie Hayter chants.
Yep.
I think people were confused by the Christian Cage Jungle Boy match.
Oh my gosh, that was
Jericho
terrible.
Danielson thing. I think the crowd was mostly just spectators for it.
Yeah.
Instead of like being overly active fans.
I don't think that one really delivered. I'm sorry.
I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it from a technical aspect, and it was almost like they just called it in the ring. They knew what the finish was, and they just wrestled.
Jericho said that too, which is amazing.
Which I think is great.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love Danielson's work. I like Jericho. When Danielson lost, I was like, oh, come on. Two in a row. I got to sit through Danielson losing two in a row.
Right. Now, he'll give you the match. I mean, it's just evident that Jericho is getting older. And I hate to be negative on this a little bit, but it just, you can tell that Father Time is catching up to him a little bit. And Danielson had to do the majority of the work. Not that he's not getting older either, but they're not the same where they were 10 years ago. And that's just part of life.
I'll share this story. I talked to Danielson on Saturday, and I told him, like, I was in Worcester front row and for your match with Daniel Garcia, and when you went tumbling to the mat, I went, oh no, like, he's hurt again.
Yeah.
And then when you rolled out to the outside and took the DDT on the concrete, I was like, okay, he's working now. And he laughed and goes, good. Nice. I'm glad I got you.
Nice. Nice. Good.
I love Danielson. I kind of came to this realization that Danielson might be my favorite wrestler.
Ah, good. Yeah, he's awesome.
But like to see him lose again, like it makes sense with where Jericho's going and so on and so on and so on. But like I still was like, I want Danielson to win.
Yeah.
But I thought it was a good match, Mike. I kind of expect them to have another one at some point. And I think Jericho even insinuated that there would be another one soon. But I think once the Acclaim lost, the air kind of went out of the building a little bit for like an hour.
All right. Yeah. So that's all I was just saying.
With a few patches of like Jamie Hayter love. Right. And that story with Hayter and Britt is going to be good. It's going to be fun. Toni Storm during her presser was a lot more well-spoken than I had anticipated. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Toni Storm. I met Toni Storm in Dallas. Oh, nice. And her mood was significantly different in talking to her than seeing her on WWE TV. And I felt her energy a lot more last night, not only in the ring, but at the post-show media scrum. So
nice.
I don't know how they inject life into that women's division.
Yeah, it's
but
tough.
They're going to try, and they're going to try it with Toni Storm.
Well,
Too much time on Toni Storm, but
yeah, it'll probably be Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa when she returns.
Yeah,
they'll unify
when she returns, and
yeah.
But you've got to tell a story with Britt Baker. You've got Toni Storm wants to work with Serena D.
Right.
So there's all that stuff.
Just back to the Acclaimed real quick.
Sure.
There's no doubt in my mind they're going to win the titles at Grand Slam. They're going to win in New York. Yeah, they got it because, James, they're so over, and you know that, being in the crowd there, like, you're right, there was a lot of disappointment. And Billy Gunn was fantastic, I thought, outside. Yeah. So good. But they're from New York. They set that up, the swerve in the media press conference there.
Yep.
So I'd book it right now, claim to win the titles at Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Yeah, and so this is a weird thing, and just to finish the question, I think that once the Acclaim lost, I think the air kind of went out of the room, other than for a few moments. But once Punk's music hit, everybody was up. And I don't know if it came across on TV, but most of the building was standing for that entire match, for the entire main event. So they were ready for it. And there was a balance of Moxley Punk chants, I thought, throughout. I don't know if that came across, but like, I think once the Acclaim lost, people kind of, you know, came down a little bit. But the Acclaimed, I talked to them on Saturday.
Oh, you did?
They were super fun, super engaging. I think they're just kind of like happy to be here.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that they don't care, because they do care.
Nice.
But they were so fun to talk to and just to have a few laughs with.
Yep.
I think that they're really fortunate to be in the spot that they are.
Yeah.
And I've become fans of them because they have great promos, and they're great wrestlers, and this scissor me daddy ass thing is now the talk of the land. And they probably went to that too many times during that match, but I mean, we were singing it. We in the crowd were singing it.
Right.
So
yeah, that was it all worked.
It did. Everyone all loved work. It.
Yeah.
The trios match.
Yeah.
The
good one, good match.
So I really liked this match. It was the Elite, Kenny Omega, and the Young Bucks defeating Adam Hangman Page and Dark Order. My actual favorite moment in the match was when Page and Omega are nose to nose, and the referee's like, "You two aren't the legal man," and both of them drag their partners over and they do the tag that way so that they are the legal man.
Oh, yes.
It's not just a simple little moment in the match, but I'm like, bravo, guys. Like, great job incorporating that. But the energy for Omega and Page is off the charts great.
Well, and that was, you know, they teased that for a long time to get them into the match. Probably about 15 minutes in, finally, you got them right there. And I love that, like, they tagged themselves in there to get in. And boom, it just went. It was awesome. You know, that key moment, I thought, though, James, was when Adam Page stopped Dark Order from laying the boots to the Young Bucks there to kind of tease a little Elite reunion, maybe.
Yeah.
But, you know, Hangman essentially cost the Dark Order the match with the buckshot when he went for it, and that didn't happen. But, yeah, the face-to-face Omega and Page, oh, place was hopping.
Yeah, we were.
Good match.
I think the other note that I kind of want to pull up here is if you watch Zero Hour, which was the AEW pre-show, mm-hmm. Eddie Kingston and Ishii,
they
I want to know how many chops were thrown in that match, because their respective chests were just destroyed. They were beat red. They were just like, wow. Like I was blown away, and like you could hear it like echo through the building.
Yeah.
Like that's how loud they were. But Eddie Kingston picks up a win.
It's a big one. He needed that after that little suspension, right?
Yeah. I think that's it for my notes on AEW's pay-per-view. One thing that I actually so I was at FanFest. I was at AEW FanFest on Saturday. Now, I actually watched Clash at the Castle at the FanFest.
Oh, okay, cool, nice.
I caught a little bit of it there, and I watched the rest throughout the course of the next however many hours.
Yep.
But like one of the things that I try and notice is I try to notice fan lines for things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I love Hook. Hook gets a great pop. He had nobody in his meet and greet line.
Oh, interesting.
Which I found kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Like for as over as Hook is,
mm-hmm.
as far as coming out and doing his thing, like I would have thought that more people would have been interested in him.
Yep.
But they weren't. And I kind of use that as a gauge as to how over is Talent X. Like you're over, they see you in the building and they cheer for you, but are you buying their stuff?
Yeah.
And maybe people are buying the Send Hook shirt because it's a cool shirt, but surprisingly, not a lot of people want to meet Hook.
That's interesting.
And maybe because we don't know his personality.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not connecting with the fans,
or it's just like you don't know what to expect when, because here's somebody who doesn't say anything on TV,
right?
So what are you going to do for a meet and greet with them,
right?
It's one of those lingering things.
That's interesting. Very interesting. Okay, something to keep an eye on. Now the AEW Fan Fest, James, that was different than the ad-free show one, or is that together?
No, they were two different things.
They're two separate, okay.
They were two separate things. So AEW did their Fan Fest from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday. Okay. I caught the second half of that. So I'm part of this wrestling community called Ad Free Shows. It's Conrad's. And I've mentioned it a bunch of times.
Yep.
It was my first time meeting a lot of people who I've been on Zoom calls with, or who I've interacted with, or...
Yep.
Like it's this great big wrestling community, and thank you for that transition, because this was actually going to be my Jerry Springer final thought.
Go for it.
So this ad-free shows community thing is it's basically a Patreon. It's a paid service for like Bruce's podcast and Eric Bischoff's podcast and Mike Chioda's podcast and I'm missing Mick Foley's got a podcast there. Matt Hardy's got a podcast there. Arn Anderson.
Yep.
Jim Ross. Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett.
You said Kurt Angle.
The whole
Angle,
nine
right?
yards. Kurt Angle.
Yep.
There are more, and I'm leaving them out. I'm sorry.
No, it's great.
But what Conrad has done is he went from a Mortgage Guy wrestling fan to creating this podcast network, which has created this sub community of strangers from all over the world who came to Chicago to hang out for a weekend. And here's an example of how like you change like community to family, and it's an extension of a family. So mortgages are Conrad's main business that we know of. I think he's got a lot of other stuff going on and he just doesn't tell it. He's the mortgage guy and he's the podcast guy, but I think he's got a lot of other side things. So I'm waiting to get checked into my hotel on Friday and I'm meeting some people for the first time who are all part of this community. I've interacted with some of them on Zoom calls and stuff like that, but I'm meeting in person some of these people for the first time.
Awesome.
And they're welcoming, they're loving, if I could use that term.
Sure.
And what happened was some of them work with or for Conrad doing mortgages in different states like Kentucky or Alabama, or because he's licensed all these different places.
Right.
So as I'm waiting and I'm talking, somebody comes around the corner and he's got a piece of paper in his hand and he goes, "I passed my mortgage certification test," which everybody's there is like, "Oh my God, congratulations. Like it's such a hard test, da, 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 da." And just from eavesdropping on the conversation, here's a wrestling fan who has met all of these strangers through wrestling.
Yeah.
And is now about to work with Conrad, who created this community, doing mortgages, which isn't a job that he ever thought he was going to do.
Sure.
And a group of people who have never met this person rallied together to help him pass this test.
That's really nice.
And so Conrad's mortgage company is called First Family Mortgage. Craig is the representative in Massachusetts. Like First Family Mortgage, you'll probably talk to him. He'll give you a good deal. He's become a friend of mine, actually, and he listens to the podcast. So
all right. Thanks, Craig.
Gave him a shout out.
Yeah.
I think his name's Craig.
Okay. Well,
his name is Craig.
Okay.
I just wanted to pop him in. But what has happened is back in 2019, 2018, when Conrad created this whole community of essentially strangers.
Right.
They became a family.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a reason why his company is called First Family Mortgage. It's because he created a family. Mm-hmm. And it's just like really cool. Like we talk about how the wrestling community rallies together with things. Like I saw it. I saw it live and I saw it with, you know, this group of, I think there were probably like 150, 200 of us. Mm-hmm. All gathered together to have a good time. And like we watched Ric Flair's last match with Ric Flair and Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett and Karen Jarrett and Conrad. And what an experience.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And it's the whole backstory of how the match came about. And there's a story about Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard approving it and what that process was. And I can't tell you what it is, but if you were there, you know.
Sure, of course. Yep.
But like I had a beer with Eric Bischoff at the bar.
That's awesome.
Stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And so like it's a cool community.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who have been really nice to me. Conrad is amongst them. As you know, I speak very highly of Conrad.
Been part of the show here before.
Yes. Yep.
Yep. Yep. No.
He was excited to come out, and he was excited that I got to hold the big gold belt.
That was awesome.
On social media.
Yeah.
The big gold belt and the WWF title, the Big Eagle title that was defended at WrestleMania 17 in a match with Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock. Mm-hmm. And I got my hands on the WrestleMania 3 Intercontinental Championship and the 94 Tag Team Championship and nice. Like belt nerd.
Well,
right.
Well,
and
well,
just we, actually like hold the history was pretty cool.
And if you think, you know, we're the belt collectors, I mean, Conrad is the guy that has to have the exact one from these particular events. And much like you, James, yes, I'm part of the Ad Free Show family as well. And I think that's really cool. How I was able to bring people together and, you know, only been to a handful of shows that Conrad and Bruce ran together. But that really sounds like an awesome weekend, though, for you to have been a part of there. The whole community together and to have everyone there, like Jim Ross appearance, Mike Chioda, Jeff Jarrett, Flair. Ric Flair came out, too, I saw. That's pretty amazing.
So, Rebel. I got to meet Rebel for the first time. Rebel
did
a happy hour Zoom call every other week. She's great. She's a former cheerleader. She's been an Impact. She's cool. A friend.
Nice. Yeah, that's a cool.
But I actually got to meet her in person, which is cool.
Nice.
And you know, when you go to a show and you have a t-shirt of a wrestler and they're not on the show, they're doing a backstage skit, and you can kind of,
I mean, you know, hell, to hang in Chicago too. It's not bad. That's really good.
I love Chicago. Great, I love city. Chicago.
Great city.
Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
There are stories I'll tell you off the air about Chicago. All right,
okay.
But, you know, that's the stuff that, and, you know, that's a good, I appreciate the transition, 'cause that was in my notes, 'cause I wanted to shout them out, because it all worked together. Like, the people at AEW were great. They gave me some great access to some off the record things.
Yep. Yep.
Because that's a whole nother story. But, you know, and then Conrad's podcast family was cool. Like,
yep.
You know, seeing Bischoff and JR play Family Feud, and, you know, David Crockett have his first gummy.
Oh God. Yeah. And then to have, Tony Khan take a shot at him.
Yeah, that was,
oh gosh, weird. Unbelievable.
Yeah, there's an Eric Bischoff Vince McMahon story that I can't share on the air, but it was essentially when Eric knew he was done in his 2019 run in WWE.
Okay.
When so maybe that story comes out on his podcast sometime. But
ooh, can't wait to hear that.
Oh, it's a great story, Mike. It's a great, great story.
Okay.
And the podcast that almost happened but didn't.
All right.
With all that I can say there.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to wrap this episode up. And then Clash at the Castle recap will be coming probably shortly after this episode drops. So we'll talk to you in a few minutes.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.